out of the area kid with my connections through Sherrard.
And what is your observation? You know, you coached in that era, and now when you watch like AAU and recruiting and unrealistic expectations and that type of stuff in today's environment. And you were an assistant with Coach Giovanni at Augie. So take us through that, how that kind of has changed over the eras.
Well, I can sum up real quickly my thought about AAU. I hate AAU basketball and everything that it has done to basketball. When I coached at Allman, for example, we played between 60 to 80 games in the summertime with our own kids, and nobody was going to. I had a couple of kids that the AAU was just getting the foothold, and they were calling from Chicago wanting, you know, a couple of our guys to go there and play. And I said, they're not going to go up there when they can play with their teammates, the guys they're going to play with during the year. And I said, if they're good enough to get recruited, they'll be seen. Believe me, they'll be seen. But, you know, they've taken the high school coach so much out of the equation as far as recruiting and things like this, because all the recruiting now is done in the summertime. When I coached at Augie, I love to go watch kids play with their high school teams during the season and during the open periods in the summertime. But when I had to go to the AAU tournaments, I absolutely despised it. Mm-hmm. And because, you know, everybody's running around and everybody's looking at some kid that you have no chance to recruit, and the big name coaches are, you know, from the Division One, they're all there, and it was more like flesh peddling as far as I was concerned.
Do 3A or Division Three, Division Two, and junior college, are they still, is the recruiting process still done at the high school level, or is that even defaulted to AAU circuit?
Well, it's obviously it's done both, because you're forced to, because once they're done in the summertime playing, you know, with their, if they do at all play with their high school team, a lot of them never play with their high school team in the summertime because they're off to playing AAU someplace all over the country. But when there's the AAU tournament in the Chicago area at Augustana, we were there. I didn't care to be there, but.
Yeah, what's the, and this is a perfect segue of, what's the answer for the off-season stuff? And so many sports are not, whatever sport you want to say, it's not basketball season. It's, basketball season's not just in the winter, it's in the spring, it's in the summer, it's the fall. You know, same with baseball, same with football, same with whatever sport you want to say. They've become such, the off-season commitment has become basically so big in every sport, where the argument is, well, the off-season commitment is then taking away that kid from a true in-season sport. And the argument will always be, the argument is there's not enough multi-sport athletes. No, and I always say the argument, well, they're doing just as much, but it's for one sport instead of multiple sports. Mm-hmm. So they're playing multiple seasons, but they're playing the same sport multiple seasons. Is there, and do you see an issue with that, or is there an answer?
There's a big issue with it, because, you know, I see these kids in the summertime that try to play multiple sports, and I don't know how kids physically or mentally, emotionally even survive those summer months, because, you know, you're going to a weightlifting session, you're going to 7-on-7, you're playing American Legion baseball, you're playing in basketball leagues, you're playing travel stuff. I mean, kids, they never get a break. There's got to be, and believe me, I love the summertime when I was a coach, because I was with my kids. But every coach now is just makes so many demands, and I don't know if coaches don't work together in a school. Kids just get torn in so many different directions and get so many mixed messages. And, you know.
But my question is, okay, could basketball survive if you didn't play summer basketball?
Yeah, it was certainly survive, because back in the old days, we didn't play summer basketball because.
Well, that's what I'm saying about most of these sports that think this off-season stuff is so important. I'm like, well, if you didn't have it, what I get to, since I've been doing it since 1990, Coach, I don't really notice, like, has play got that much better? Am I off? I mean, kids have got stronger and bigger. I think weight room stuff is important. But as far as the actual skill set of watching the games and, like, the IQ of the game, you can answer that better than I can. But I guess I don't, with all the off-season commitment, and I'm talking about every sport. I don't care what sport it is. It's like, has the IQ of the game got better? Has the actual play of the game got better? I don't know. I don't think it has.
See, you know, what I see is the summertime in basketball, particularly, they play so many games, and they don't practice. They just play games, so you just keep repeating the same mistakes. And in football, you know, 7-on-7, I can see where it's fun if you're a quarterback and a receiver and a defensive back. But during the season, they hit you.
Yeah.
And so I've seen so many coaches, well, we're going to really be great this year because we did this in 7-on-7. Well,
then you got to block and tackle.
Then you got to block and tackle.
First week of the season. Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that is really being criticized a lot is the 7-on-7 in football. And I question that too. But the thing, though, that when you talk to coaches, most of them agree. Yeah, we need to do less in the summer. But then, like, when there is an IHSA bylaw amendment that says, you know, reduce contact days from 25 to 20, mm-hmm. it fails
right.
overwhelmingly. It's like, okay, well, I thought everybody said we need to do less in the summer, but nobody can say, nobody can follow through and actually say we're going to do less.
Well, you know, if Coach X in football or basketball is going to do something in the summertime, then Y and Z, they better be doing something in the summertime to counter what X is doing. And if you don't, and let's say one X starts to have some success and your school board now says, well, you're not working as hard in the summertime and having an off-season program as good as X is having. So, you know, it's just a catch-22. And I don't know, obviously, what the answer, because nobody seems to know what the answer is. But some of youth sports, even lower than at the high school level, it's, in my opinion, is totally out of control. I got a 10-year-old granddaughter that's playing ASA softball and travel basketball, and year-round she never has a break.
Mm-hmm.
And at 10 years old, is that?
Well, and see, this is the other thing about, and I'm guilty of it. I'll sit here as a parent and say I'm guilty of it, that, you know, my oldest daughter played ASA softball, all right? I coach my boy playing youth basketball, right? So from third grade on, where we'd play 70 games or whatever. But so and then in the same breath, you know, we complain, why can't these kids play on their own? Well, because they've, you know, and I'm at fault, I admit it. Because we've conditioned them that they can't play on their own because they have to have a coach there, they have to have two referees there, right? They have to have someone running the scoreboard there. Mm-hmm. And they have to have basically someone watching them play.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what that's one of the big problems. In youth sports, again, under this, it's a business model too. I mean, we just did a story the other day about what it takes. There was a Wire story on some higher education study about what it takes, you know, what parents are spending for their children to play athletics now from youth level to high school level. But you talk about all these travel leagues and, you know, it's like you said, you're just conditioned to play all these things at such a young age. And I can't remember what coach was here before where I think that's impacted a little bit of the high school participation numbers because the luster's lost. Kids play so many games that the attraction to play at high school level, they don't care if they get to play on Friday Night Lights. They play enough other games under lights or whatever the sport is, basketball or baseball or softball or whatever. They've played so many games that's not the attraction for them to play the sport anymore because they've played 8,000 games by the time they're in high school.
Yeah, and, you know, when you've played in national tournaments and if you've won a national championship, the state tournament doesn't, as you said, doesn't quite have the luster that it once did. There's a young lady in Rock Island right now that has been recruited for softball as an eighth grader and supposedly is committed to an SEC school, and the parent told somebody else, story got back to me, that you know she plays in a travel team, an elite team in the Chicago area in softball. They go up to practice two or three times a week, and then all the tournaments year-round, et cetera. But the parents said that they spent $30,000 last year on the travel and all this kind of thing associated with ASA softball. That's just
pay my daughter's tuition in Iowa next year. Yeah, and that's the other thing, too, about when I've talked before about the other attraction for the kids. And this is where I think football is hurt. Football's on trial, and people argue with me all the time. The concussion thing mm-hmm. is an issue. But, see, they're losing out, in my opinion, football, and they're never going to recover. And that's a sport that really has to look itself in the mirror and say, what are we going to do? Because the games to practice ratio with football,
mm-hmm.
you're at a huge disadvantage for kids coming in to junior high or specifically high school, where you're practicing 5 days a week minimum. You know, then you throw in the preseason practices, and then you throw in some of the off-season stuff that you know you're semi quote unquote required to do, and you play max 9 games. You know, you reverse that to when you're playing summer basketball, summer softball, summer baseball, where you're practicing once or twice a week and playing 17 games on the weekend,
mm-hmm.
right? In exactly. whatever sport. And that's the games to practice ratio is a big issue that kids are conditioned at a young age where it's more games than practice. And getting them to commit to practice then when they get at the high school level, my opinion is kids will say, man, I want to play games. I'm not going to practice 4 days a week and wait to play a game on a Friday night. I see it a little bit with my kids that have played, you know, with practice. It's like, man, you know, the Allen Iverson thing. We're talking about practice. Well, yeah, that's what playing sports is about. That's the condition at the young age where you don't have a lot of practice. You have a lot of games.
As a high school athlete myself, the most fun I ever had in any sport was a football game. I hated every football practice I ever had. I mean, you stand around a lot, and then you hit a lot, and those two things are really not a lot of fun all the time. I mean, football is a tough sport, and you got to have that mentality, but the games are fun. Practices are really tough, and it's torture.
Yeah, and I mean, is that do you think there's some fairness in saying that the, you know, if you're a young kid going through the system and you play youth sports, you're conditioned to play games and not to practice?
Well, you know, and when you get into the high school season and you're playing two games a week where they've played five games on Saturday in the summertime and five games on Sunday, you know, you lose a game, you know, so what? We got another one to play. Yeah. You lose a game, you got another one to play. It loses the winning and losing significance, I think, by the amount of games that they play. And then when they get to the high school season, you know, now we're only playing two games a week.
Yeah, the game, that's the luster of the attraction of playing the game. That's not the attraction for the kid
right.
at the high school level to play the games because they've played so many. Could you think you could, if you were doing it all over again, and you were not Larry Schulte, 1965, but you were Larry Schulte, 2017, 2018. Could you do it?
No, I couldn't do it because right physically I couldn't do it.
No,
right
I mean, I'm saying if you were in a time machine and you're Larry Schulte, 2017, 2018, where you're a 24-year-old kid.
No, I've been asked that question a number of times, and I would probably still make a lot of demands on our kids, but obviously, the approach has to be completely different than it was in the old days. I mean, a lot of us coached in the Bobby Knight type style. That certainly doesn't work today. And, you know, I think good coaches, I'm not talking about myself, but I think good coaches will adapt to whatever the situation is. But I think it's a really, really difficult job, much more difficult today because of so many outside factors that we didn't have back in the day.
Well, and that's what I'm saying with the rule now is maybe 10 years at a school, what do you think? and the exception is 20 years, 30 years. I mean, the rule now is if you can make it 10 years at one school in today's environment.
I just can't believe the
number. That equates to 30 years in 1970.
I can't believe the number of young coaches that get out of the business. And another factor of that is if you're a young coach, you better have a very, very understanding spouse because, you know, if you don't, you're not going to last very long. And a lot of coaches get out because wives think they're not putting in the quality family time and they're not around enough. And, you know, as a coach, you do sacrifice a lot of time with your own kids in order to be with the other kids that you're coaching. So, yeah, it's a real difficult job. And, you know, whatever they're getting paid today, they're certainly underpaid. And you do it because you love being with kids, and you do it because you love the relationships that you develop with kids and with other coaches. And, you know, as an old-timer now, people say, do you miss it? I said, I don't miss the bus rides and all of that kind of stuff, but I said I certainly miss being around the kids and the coaches.
Yeah, and do you think it's getting worse or getting better? Or is it plateaued? I'm talking about the outside influences.
No, I
bet you Reed on, Leighton, I'm going to read on here, I remember 20 years ago, and he had the great line. And I'm not offended by it when he said it, and he offended some people, of course. Can you imagine Duncan?
No, he never offended anybody.
He said, all parents are rational people, but for dealing with their own child. And there's some, that hurts when he says that, but there's some definite truth to that. And I default to seeing myself a little bit. You always think, well, why are they not doing that?
Sure.
Now, I'm not going crazy about my daughter's a top player, my son's a top player on the team, but still questioning that and even, you know, talking about it with your child, you know, on the way home or whatever, not maybe the next day or whatever. And there's truth to that.
Duncan always had a good method of dealing with playing time with parents having complaints. If parent A would come in and complain that, you know, my kid needs to be playing more, he said, we're not going to talk about it unless we bring in player B's. And then we'll discuss it with both parents there if this other kid is playing ahead of your kid. Well, they never wanted to take him up on that. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to discuss it that way.
Yeah, and you can see why. So that's the thing. So the outside influences, so that's going to get worse, you think, before it gets better, or if it
well, just what I'm observing from all the youth stuff that I go to with my grandkids now, yeah, I think it's going to get one heck of a lot worse. I wish I could be more optimistic. But
okay. What is Larry Schulte like? And maybe it's all a part of us getting older, because I find myself doing it, where when I go to athletic events, I like to just sit by myself and watch games. And my, you know, sometimes I get criticized from my wife. Why you got to be so antisocial? Mm. You know what? But I've been accustomed to broadcasting games, so I, you know, can enjoy them that way. What's Larry Schulte like at a game? Is it do you have to sit by yourself, or is it tough to sit there? Or do you put earplugs in?
I get as far removed as I possibly can from other parents and grandparents and that kind of thing, and. Gosh, I do bite my tongue. I never say a word, believe it or not, because some of the statements I hear and the self-centered stuff. You know, you're watching a softball game with nine kids, and they don't recognize that their kid is not the only kid out there, that there are other eight kids, you know. So, yeah, it's tough, but I'm like you. I'm pretty antisocial when I go to those kinds of things.
All right, and because I want to bring that up. You coached at a time in the Western Big Six when there were some pretty big personalities. You were there at Liggett's and Moline, I think, and you coached with Duncan Reed and coached against him.
Right.
And I just remember being a child of the 1970s when my mom and dad would take me to UT games. You know, Coach Morris was at all of them. He didn't have a big ego. He's just a class dude. And I still argue with Scott Verstrate every day. Best coach ever in the Western Big Six in any sport, Don Morris. Case closed. End of discussion. But, you know, then when Cliff Talley was coaching at UT, or it was East Moline then, and Whitey Verstrate coached at Moline, Coach Reed coming in at Rocky, and, you know, those great names. And then you got to coach against Reed, coach with him, and coach against Jerry Leggett. Do we have those type of personalities? Or maybe when I was just a kid, I thought they were bigger than
Well, I don't think the public allows coaches to have that kind of personality anymore. You know, some of those guys were pretty flamboyant and did things a little bit left or far right of center. I don't know that you could get by with some of the things and the antics that were pulled in. But, boy, there were some really great coaches and
great
fantastic players in this area. Now, when I first came to Almond and I'm coaching against Rock Island, you know, they've got the Jenkins brothers and Pete Michael. I mean, they've got four or five kids that were Division I players on the same team, you know. And toward the end of Duncan's career when things had kind of tailed off and we beat him the last five times that we played him, I mentioned that to him one time after we were both done coaching. No, that never happened. That never happened. Selective forgetting.
Yeah, and that's why, as we wrap up here, I mean, that's why I always tell these people when I have them come in, I wish the conversation could be longer because the time goes so fast. But I know I always see you Facebook out about when you watch Ethan Happ play. But I guess as we could end it, kind of the rare, and Darren Bazzari has said this all the time, about generational player. You know, you get a generational player is one. And, you know, I think about this area like Western Big Six in my area since living here in Big Ten basketball. Who out of the Western Big Six has played in the Big Ten? Well, Bruce Douglas at Illinois was and had impact. Bruce Douglas from Quincy in the late 70s, early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Payne, late 70s, early 80s, Quincy went to Iowa. Since that point, zero, right?
Well Joey Range.
Range, that's right, at Galesburg. I missed him. And then Rod Thompson, who transferred in from there,
right,
went there. So that's four
since
1979. And then I think about Ethan Happ, the impact he's made at Wisconsin.
You can go back on the other end, though. You have Don Nelson.
Yeah, of course. That was long before my time at Iowa, of course. But that's six guys.
Joe Novak and Mike Denoma from Rock Island, also at Iowa.
What year would have that been?
That was in the 60s.
Okay. Right.
You can go back in the 50s to Bill Seberg and Augie Martell from Moline playing at Iowa.
Yeah, so that's 10 guys. In the
Steve
last
Spanich from Almond playing at Illinois. Kaburski from Moline playing at Bradley, or Illinois, and then Bradley.
Now, he would have been played at Bradley then in the really good era.
Right. Yeah. He started off at Illinois.
But okay, but segueing, though, to what the impact of a kid like Happ who grew up in Miami and played at a small school. You don't see that.
No, you
and
certainly
you
don't.
Have to appreciate that.
You know, to put that in perspective, you know, I coached 46 years as a head coach. I never had a Division I player other than when I was an assistant at Rock Island. But as a head coach, I had some Division II players. But I never, so to have a kid like Ethan, you know, play in the Big Ten and at the level that he's playing, how impressive and what an impressive young man. I love to watch him. You know, the teams I like to follow, Illinois, Iowa, and Wisconsin, it's tough these days.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, Coach Schulte, thanks for coming out today. Really,
I really appreciate you having me, Jim.
All right, Larry Schulte started back in 1965. Long live the 1965 Sherrard Tigers. That'll do it for Sportsline on this Saturday morning.
Putting off planning for your future? We get it. You know you're supposed to plan for retirement early. You know you're supposed to plan for things like going back to school and sending your kids to college. But do you? If you do, we...